So there is a recent New York Times bestseller. It's called Option B. Some of you may have heard about it. It's a very, very famous book and selling tremendously. It's written by Sheryl Sandberg. She is a billionaire and is COO of Facebook. So she's second in line to Mark Zuckerberg. Very, very powerful lady. And her husband, she has two kids, and her husband was in his 50s, early 50s, and they were in a resort in Mexico on a vacation, and he was on the treadmill, and he suffered a cardiac arrhythmia and suddenly died right there. And then his, I think, brother and she went and found him lying on the treadmill with a bruise on the head, blood, you know, where he had fallen. It was a shock for her, you know, suddenly this person she loved so much, and she's such a powerful individual, and she was devastated. She was destroyed by this shock. And we don't know when life will suddenly throw us, you know, googly, as they say in cricket, or a curveball. And she said that when tragedy strikes, there are three things that we do. Either we personalize it, that it's somehow my fault. Like she felt, you know, if I had, you know, been there with him when he was exercising, or if I had taken him to the doctor for a checkup. So somehow we personalize the tragedy. When death happens, it's my fault. No matter whose death, if somebody got cancer, we should have picked it up sooner. You know, whatever. The second thing we do when tragedy strikes is that it is pervasive. That means morning, noon, and night, my body, mind, intellect, everything will be suffering. I'll be constantly never able to escape this tragedy. And tragedies come to everybody, and we think it is going to be pervasive. Every moment of my day and night will be pervaded. And the third mistake we make, say it is permanent. That how can I ever get over the sorrow of this my dear husband, whom I loved so much. And it happened suddenly. See, if he was sick for a while and, you know, passed away, that's different. And so she felt that she would never be able to overcome these three things. But in this book, she tells us how tragedy can be overcome. First of all, it's not personal. It's not your fault. And it's not pervasive and not permanent. It is there, yes. It will affect you for a while severely, and you can never forget this individual, but with time, it gets better. You know, no matter how great a blow is, with time, we are able to overcome it. Not overcome in the sense of forgetting it, but it does not pervade every moment of my life. And then I realize it's not permanent. Nothing is permanent. And that's exactly the mistake Arjuna made, except death had not yet happened. He was imagining the death. So it was the same situation, but as yet nobody had died in the Mahabharata war. So his grief was a premonition, not after the event. But he went through exactly the same thing as Sheryl Sandberg did. And one was, it is personal. It is my fault. Because I am the leader of the Pandavas, and if I don't fight, then the war will not happen and there won't be destruction. And if there is destruction, I will be responsible because I'll be killing my guru and my grandfather and my cousins and all these soldiers. They will suffer and they will become widows. So the entire first chapter is Arjuna Vishad Yoga, or Arjuna's grief, where he personalizes this situation. And he says that this situation will be pervasive and permanent. He thinks forever people will be sad, wives and children will be suffering, and then the society will go down. So the entire society will be affected and it will be permanent. So in the first chapter, he's giving a lecture to Bhagwan Sri Krishna, telling him why the war is bad. So exactly the same thing, but before the event. And then Bhagwan, in his second chapter, when he starts the teachings, first of all says it's not permanent. You are not fighting, Arjuna. You are an agent. You are an instrument. In the 11th chapter, he says, Maye Nihataf Purvam Eva Nimit Matram Bhava Savyasachin. Oh, left-handed warrior. He calls him left-handed warrior because Arjuna was so good, he could shoot equally good with both hands. So he says, you are the instrument. All these people you are seeing, they have already been killed by me. Because nothing is permanent and nothing is pervasive. If you think this grief is permanent and pervasive, you are mistaken. These people have already been killed, but what is going to be killed is the body. Antavanta ime dehaha. Bodies will perish. And it has, you know, we know in our life, you know, near and dear ones have gone. Parents, you know, grandparents, you know. So, but that is the nature of human birth. Whoever is born is bound to perish, number one. Number two, Bhagwan says, you are not this body and you were never born. I was never born and all these kings were never born because they are all Atma. They are all eternal. They are all permanent. So death happens to the body, but the Atma, which is my real nature, na jayate mriyate va kadachit. Never ever does this Atma ever get born or perish. So this Atma, the soul, the consciousness, that is your true nature, is never born and never perishes. So if you think I am this body, yes, there will be sorrow, there will be grief. But as long as you recognize that you are that immutable self that never perishes, then life is eternal. And we are all eternal. All these people you are thinking will perish, they are all eternal. And also, you are not the doer and you are not the enjoyer. You are the Atma, this body, mind and intellect, this ego, this perceiver, feeler and thinker enjoys. For the new people, this chart is the BMI chart where I think I am this body, mind and intellect. With the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. And with the intellect, I think the thoughts. And V represents vasanas or desires. And Om represents consciousness, God's presence in us. So he says that all of us are Om, that divinity, but by mistake I think myself to be this body, mind and intellect, this ego, perceiver, feeler and thinker, and that's when I suffer. So the only thing permanent and pervasive in this universe is Brahman, the consciousness. Those who were at the seminar yesterday, we talked about it, that Brahman, this consciousness alone is permanent and pervasive. Everything else, whatever you see, whether it is the mountains, whether it is buildings, everything is born, created, sustained and perished. So focus on the Atma and not on the individual. And then he talks briefly about the law of Karma Yoga. As we said, the second chapter is the introduction. So he talks briefly about Karma Yoga. We'll talk a little, which we have been doing in the third chapter. And then at the end of the second chapter, Bhagavan in the teachings tells us the qualities of a Sthita Prajna, the man of wisdom. And Arjuna asks, Sthita Prajnasya ka bhasha, Samadhistasya keshava, Sthitadi kim prabhashet, kim asit vrajet kim. So how does a wise person function in the world? How does he walk? How does he talk? How does he sit? And Arjuna asks because he wants to know how can a wise person function so I may also become that. And Bhagwan in the beautiful shlokas tells us about how a man of wisdom, and it is said those are the most powerful shlokas. So the last few shlokas of the second chapter, Sthita Prajna Lakshana, we should all read again because they tell us how a man of wisdom functions in the world. And he talks about how the person has no desires, no selfish desires. He remains the same in joy and sorrow and so on. Then the Bhagwan in the third chapter starts with a question by Arjuna where he says, what is the difference between karma and jnana, action and knowledge? Because you are saying knowledge is superior to action, then why are you asking me to get involved in this horrendous war? And Bhagwan tells him that they are not two separate paths. Not that there is a path of Karma Yoga and a path of Jnana Yoga, but karma, doing actions dedicated to the Lord, dedicated to me, unselfishly for the benefit of society. And at this moment, your duty is that you have been placed in a situation where you're facing evil. So do your duty, but dedicate it to the Lord, dedicate it to me, Krishna says. And once you do that, then your mind is pure and it is ready for knowledge. So karma and jnana are sequential. They are not separate paths. That's the beginning of the third chapter. And then he talks about working with the yajna spirit. We have talked about that. Yajna is in the past used to be when the whole village would get together and there would be a central fire and the priest would be chanting mantras and offering. And people would all participate. Some people would clean that place. Some people would bring the firewood. Some people would bring the ahutis, what they offer. Some people would feed everybody afterwards. Some people would clean up. So the whole village or the whole community would be involved in the yajna. And the goal of the yajna was purification of the atmosphere and the benefit of the whole town. So whenever people get together and work and sink their individual differences, that is called a yajna spirit, where they work for the betterment of all. So he says, work with that spirit, that you are not working for yourself, you are working for all. And then in the third chapter, Bhagwan says that each one of us is an example. Yatyat acharati shreshtha tattat eve tarojanaha. Just as the senior or the wise person acts, others follow. So he gives his own example that I don't have to work. Bhagwan is the Lord of the universe. Yet he takes on the job of a driver, of a chauffeur, of a charioteer. He does, and he was himself king of Mathura. It was not that he was the king and he was the Lord. And Arjuna says, I want you to be my driver. And he does. And after the war is finished, he doesn't go and stay in a royal tent. He goes and stays where all the other drivers are sitting, are sleeping. In that small little tent, he sleeps with them. Because I'm a driver, I'm not a king. And he cleans the horses, he washes their feet, puts balm on them, cleans the chariot. After Arjuna is long ago sleeping, Bhagwan is up and working. So the point is that he shows by his own example that no matter what job you are given, do it to the best of your ability. If you have a job to clean, clean it. If you have a job to cook, you have a job to vacuum, do the dishes, whatever job I am doing, just do it as Bhagwan did, without complaint and as my duty. Whatever I have been assigned, I do it. And he says, same way Janaka and other kings also, even though they were human beings, but they evolved to the highest and continue to work as kings, but they still reach the highest goal. And so he says, dedicate your activities to the Lord. And then Arjuna asks, what is it that prevents me from progressing in life? Why does anichanapi vashneya, what is it that propels a person even not wishing, even I know what is right, and I'm still not able to do the right thing, and why do I keep doing the right thing? So Bhagwan says, kama esha, krodha esha. So desire and then all its children, anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, all those selfishness, ego. So out of desire arises all that, and that is what covers our wisdom. And that we have heard about. So today we'll do the last verse of the third chapter, which is summarizing and talking about desire. And then we'll begin the fourth chapter. Let us see how much time we have. After this shloka, I'll do a brief introduction to the fourth chapter. So the 43rd shloka of chapter 3, Karma Yoga. Evam buddhe param buddhva. Sanstavyatmanam atmana. Jahi shatrum mahabaho. Kamarupam durasadam. So, evam. So, in this way, as I have explained in the 42 verses, buddhe param buddhva. Buddhe means the intellect. Param means higher than the intellect. Buddhava means knowing. And last week we had studied where Bhagavan had said that the sense organs are superior to the sense objects. The mind controls the sense organs. The intellect should control the mind. And beyond the intellect is Saha, that consciousness, that Brahman. So know that which is beyond the buddhi, beyond the intellect. And knowing, buddhava means knowing it very well. Not only knowing it, but understanding it with your buddhi, with your intellect, know it. And then what do you do? Santabhya. Santabhya means controlling atmanam atmana. So controlling the self by the self. She says, what do you mean controlling the self by the self? So we'll talk about that. What does Bhagavan mean? How can I control myself by myself? And then he says, Jahi Shatrum Mahabaho, O great warrior. And whenever he wants to praise Arjuna, he calls him Mahawarrior. Like I could say, you know, this is the best Gita class. The questions you ask are the best, and everybody feels happy, you know, yeah, we know so much. So same way, Bhagavan tells him, Mahabaho. Why? Because you are a great warrior. You have overcome all external obstacles. He had overcome, defeated so many enemies, and then so many problems had come in all their years in the forest, and how he meditated and acquired all the weapons. And he says, you have overcome all the external enemies. Now you have an internal enemy, and that is your own ignorance and your own desire. Desire arises out of ignorance. When I do not know I am the consciousness, then in the vasanas arises the desire, ignorance. In the vasanas arises ignorance. That leads to desire in the intellect, thoughts in the mind, and actions in the body. I think I am imperfect. So he says, O great warrior, destroy the enemy within. Because you have already destroyed all this. You are a great warrior, but the enemy is kama rupam. It is of the nature of desire. That is your enemy. And durasadam, it is very difficult to overcome the dorpi. So the enemy is very difficult because it is desire. And we all know when a desire arises in my mind where I must have it, it becomes very difficult. I know. Oh, it just takes us over to have it. So let us see. So in the first, he says, buddhava, having the knowledge. Knowledge is necessary to remove ignorance. If I have ignorance, only way it can be removed by knowledge. You may do all the karma yoga and serve the world and make the world a better place. And beautiful, that's great. You may go to the temple and pray and offer flowers and chant the mantras, and you have memorized all the Purush Suktam and all the sloka. Very good. But that will not remove your ignorance. To realize the truth, I have to go to a guru, sit at the feet of the teacher and learn. That is the only way to realize. Everything else helps. Karma yoga helps. Bhakti helps. Prayer, doing all these pranayama and all these breathing exercises and yoga exercise. Wonderful. That's great. But that cannot be my ultimate goal. My ultimate goal has to be knowledge. That's what the... And bhakti can reach, but then you have to have total surrender. Absolutely. But even the people who have surrender, like Mirabai, she had total surrender for Lord Krishna. But she still got knowledge because she still wrote to her guru Haridas when she had questions what to do. So... And her bhajans, her songs are filled with knowledge. They are not only bhakti. So jnana is very essential, but bhakti alone can take it. But for that, it needs complete surrender. And that is not easy. Surrendering everything to the Lord. I am not the doer. I do nothing. You alone work. We all say that. But the moment somebody comes and says, you know, your lecture today was useless, immediately, what? I worked so, you know, so ego immediately arises. We think we have overcome, but it is not. So that's why the knowledge is very, very important. So, desire can only be overcome by knowledge. Of course, karma yoga helps, you know, doing actions unselfishly for others and then dedicating to the Lord with bhakti. Lord, you are the doer. And then ultimately to remove it from the root, to dissolve my vastness, I have to get the right knowledge and I have to meditate. That's what they say, the path of meditation takes you from the body to the mind, the mind to the intellect, and ultimately the intellect to the self. That is what we practice in meditation. So that's how desire can be removed from the root. And when he says atmanam atmana, what does he mean? To conquer the self by the self, or control, sanstabhya, control the self by the self. So when they use atma in the Bhagavad Gita or in our scriptures, it has many meanings. That's why you cannot just read and read the translation. I get a Sanskrit dictionary. Atma can mean many things. Atma can mean, of course, the consciousness, the supreme self. Atma can mean the ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. It is used as that. Atma also places is used as the mind. So here, when Bhagavan says atmanam atmana, what he means is control the ego by this consciousness. So this limited ego, this perceiver, feeler, and thinker, that I think myself to be this limited body, mind, and intellect, and I work only as this ego, and that is all I am. I am a male or female, and my name is Anil or Satish or Harshaben, or my, you know, that's all my existence is. So remove that and realize I am the Atma, I am the Self. That is my true nature. So know that and control the ego with the consciousness. So focus on the consciousness, and as consciousness, what should I do? Not as a limited individual, not as a male or female, but as the Atma, as the consciousness, how should I function? So read the second chapter, the indicator Sthita Prajna Lakshanas, and how will a man of wisdom who has realized the self, in fact, in the office we have a book, Jivan Muktanand Lahiri, where Shankaracharya ji has told us how this man of wisdom remains the same in all adversities. So surrender your activities to the Lord, do your duty without I and my, and focus on who I really am, and reduce the desires by unselfish work, by dedicating it to the Lord. So that is the verse number 43. And then we can chant the closing the words of the chapter. After the every chapter, yes.
Just a question, Doctor.
Sure.
This may sound picky, but the whole thing about the self helping the self. I bet everybody who read that thought, what does that mean? And I thought about what it could mean. I never came up with that.
Right.
Why would the writer choose a word that would be so obviously misunderstood? Or
you know why?
Yeah, tell me.
Because when they're teaching, the teacher is teaching, the students have a tendency to doze off. In those days, they didn't have a book. See, they had to listen. So it says, atmanam, atmanam. What does he mean? Exactly. So it wakes people up. Or like when I tell a joke, like yesterday in that, people after 3-4 lectures were dozing off. So I had to wake them up. So it is meant so that the student questions, what does he mean? So yeah. That is the idea. So, and at the same time, to make the student, because Sanskrit is such a beautiful language that the same word can be used in many ways. So to teach the student the 3-4 meanings of Atma, as I gave you 4 meanings, and there are a lot more. So that is the idea, to teach the student and to wake him up. Because it happens, you know, you're after lunch and the teacher is talking and you have a tendency to fall asleep. So that is the idea. But thank you. That's a good question. Yeah. Yes.
So I had this translation and I was going to see how you explained. And I think, because it said here, control self. controlling the mind by the self. But the way you explain, I think it's better, because the self is identifying with ego,
yes,
in the form of body, mind, intellect.
Right.
So you have to control any of those and remove the ego to understand self.
Thank you. So yes.
Makes more sense.
Thank you so much. Yeah. But also some people have interpreted this as controlling the mind by the intellect. That is another way of interpreting that, control the mind by the intellect and then ultimately that. So that also is another translation. The idea is to control the mind and control the fluctuations and the vagaries of the mind. Thank you.
It's
so
not like Atma and Jivatma.
It's Jivatma also, you can say, yes. Jivatma, yes, again, Atma is Jivatma, the mind and intellect is the Jiva.
Okay.
And the subtle body, and that also, yes, yeah, that's perfect. Again, control the Jiva by the self. Yes, so Jivatma, yeah, so that's why Atma, that's another meaning. Thank you for bringing it up. So Atma has a tremendous, actually every word in Sanskrit has so many meanings. Sanskrit is a very beautiful language. At the same time, it takes time to study, because it is the origin of all the languages, not only the Asia, India, but all the European languages, even it is maybe through Latin and Sanskrit. These are the origin of all the language, not the Chinese and, you know, not those languages, Japanese, but the Western languages owe their origin to Sanskrit. That's why the word Matra in Sanskrit becomes Mata in Hindi, Mutter in German, Madre in Spanish, and the mayor in, you know, French. So a lot of words are similar. So that's the idea. Yes, Jivatma is another meaning of Atma. Yes.
Thank you.
So we'll just end with the closing words. Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade Karma Yoga Nama Tritiyodhyayah